Athletic, your Colts beat writer. And it's been interesting of late. Back from the owners' meetings last week out in Phoenix, got a little sunshine, so that was good. But I also got some information, which is also good, and I can share some of that with you today. Gonna basically try to get caught up on the offseason. I haven't done a podcast in a little while, so I think there are a lot of topics to cover. Among them, I'll sort of recap some of my conversation with Frank Reich from the Coach's Breakfast last week. There's some interesting ground to cover there. Some of that dealing with the Colts' new acquisitions, who we'll also address. Devin Funchess, certainly. Justin Houston, what are the plans there? What does he bring? I'll talk a little bit about that. And also had a very, very productive conversation with Chris Ballard at the owners' meetings as well. And some of that had to do with the current roster. Some had to do with the draft. I will recap a lot of that. And there's some there's some tidbits in there that I did not necessarily get into too much depth in my stories from Phoenix. So I'll be able to elaborate on some of that here. And then finally, we'll talk about the draft, certainly. And there's one position I want to sort of touch on that no one's kind of talking about. But I don't know, I'm going to throw something out there. We'll get to that in a little bit. So back to the top, I want to start off with my conversations with Frank Reich last week and just an overall sort of update on what's going on there and what's on his mind. And I thought my big takeaway from talking to Frank was this. It's not something specific, but more of a broader thing. I would say that his optimism, I guess, for year two was really striking to me. You know, I wrote about this as well, so forgive me if you read this, but you know, one thing that I talked to him about or asked him about was, I said, okay, you're on tape now, and your offense is no longer going to be a surprise. He was not fazed by that at all, and in fact, he thinks they're going to be an even better offense and even on defense as well in year two, obviously because the players will have more time in the scheme. He feels like Andrew Luck specifically is going to take more command of this offense. He thought Andrew Luck was a lot more passive last year, not because of any particular reason other than the fact that it was a new offense and he kind of deferred a lot more. But if you know anything about Andrew Luck, he has really grown, I think, as a quarterback and is actively participating in how games get called and game plans get put together. And so Frank Reich is envisioning that process becoming much more involved, I guess, this year. And Andrew Luck's participation in that process really, really growing this year. So I thought that was very, very interesting. So something to look for. And then the other thing that Frank Reich mentioned is that they have a lot of tricks up their sleeve still. Among them, the RPOs in particular. Now, you know, you hear that term all the time. What does it really mean? And I think there's certainly a lot of ambiguity there. But the bottom line is, this is a big staple of the Philadelphia offense. It's going to be, I think, a bigger staple in the Colts offense next year. It doesn't mean you're going to see it, you know, 15, 20 times a game. But certainly, sporadically, you're going to see it. And they have some avenues or some plays to run off of those RPOs that they did not utilize last year. And that is something the rest of the league, in Frank's estimation, has not seen and isn't necessarily ready for. So they're going to have to react to that. So he thinks they still have the upper hand. So that's going to be very interesting. Now, one thing that I would say is Frank is very, very excited about Devin Funchess. Now, this signing, look, there have been mixed feelings about it, and I'll just give you mine. My feelings are as follows. Look, it's an upgrade, okay? This is an upgrade from what the Colts had. Is he the long-term answer? Well, yeah, well, no, okay? Because they gave him a one-year contract, so they don't think he is either. But that's not why he's here. He's not here to be the long-term companion to T.Y. Hilton. That's not the idea. Unless he goes out there and he balls out and shows otherwise, and then they have a decision to make next spring. We'll get to that later. But the bottom line here is you want to do a couple of things. You want to increase competition in that room. They have done that. Look, you can sit here and you can criticize the depth at receiver, but I would argue for what they have, given the fact that they haven't invested a lot of resources there, they have a very competitive receiver room. Look, when you talk about T.Y. Hilton, Devin Funchess, Deion Kane perhaps coming back, he probably won't be ready till training camp, but certainly if he can get back on his feet and be the player we think he is, he adds a tremendous amount of competition. Chester Rogers is a guy who is an easy guy to criticize and a guy who is, you know, one of the Colts fans' favorite punching bags. And I get it, right? I mean, he's kind of underachieved at times and all that and lots of drops. I get all that. But the bottom line there is this guy pulled it together. He finished the season very strong last year. And Chester Rogers was a big contributor down the stretch. Give him credit. He made some plays late in the season that really, truly, truly helped them win games. And I thought his run after the catch and getting extra yards after catches was huge for the Colts. So let's be fair about who Chester Rogers is. You know, for an undrafted guy and to come in and make the plays that he has the last few years, I mean, like, that's really not something anyone ever would have predicted. So see him for what he is. And I think if you judge him by that metric, he's a useful player to have on your roster. So we're talking about competition. So Reese Fountain still has to prove that he belongs. All right. Does he have a spot on this roster? I don't know. I'll tell you a guy under the radar. I'm not predicting he's going to be a stud, but he's a guy who Frank Reich is really excited about for what it's worth. Marcus Johnson. You might not remember him, but they traded for him with Seattle in training camp last year, or I should say in the preseason. Right before the start of the regular season, he played, I believe, 4 games before he had that season-ending injury at the Jets last season. Now, Marcus Johnson, he had a huge drop in the first Houston game, and that was pretty costly, and it actually contributed to that loss. But one thing I'd say is he is a guy with real upside, and he understands the offense. He's a smart guy. He's a pretty decent athlete from what I can tell. So I'm interested to see what he can do. He was starting to get some confidence, and it was really starting to grow, I think, when he went down last season. So as I said, he's going to get a fair shot because Frank Reich is a big fan of his, and I think that gives him an opportunity. So we'll see what happens there. And then, look, I mean, do they draft a guy? Maybe. Certainly possible. I mean, you know, they've got Zach Pascal. I mean, they have – if you pick 4 or 5 guys out of that list, I mean, there's going to be, like, legitimate competition there. Look, is it a great unit? No, absolutely not. But if you told me your number one wide receiver was T.Y. Hilton, one of the best in the league, and then your second wide receiver was Devin Funchess, a guy with his skill set and his, I guess, sort of physical attributes, if you will, right? 6'4", huge guy, big hands, strong guy. I mean, that's a nice combination to have at 1 and 2. You have 2 guys, very different players, very different physiques, very different skill sets. That's a good thing. And that plays into the hands of Frank Reich. So I think they have some things to work with there. Is it a done deal? No. Are they... Is that off the table in the draft? Hell no. In fact, it's very much at the center of the table. But look, I mean, but let's just see it for what it is. Now, throw into that mix Eric Ebron, no explanation needed. And then this is a very, I think, this is a topic that has not been addressed quite nearly enough. But Jack Doyle played 6 games last year. Jack Doyle is a Pro Bowl tight end. And I think Jack Doyle with Frank Reich is a fantastic combination. We haven't seen it, really. So you're going to see that again at some point here. And Jack Doyle's got to get back on the field. He had a rough go of it last year. But they expect him to be back, and he should be, I hope, good as new. So they've got a good stable of pass catchers, I think, on the whole. When you factor in those tight ends, Mo'Ali Cox, I mean, they've got a very, very solid and I think arguably somewhat deep stable of pass catchers. So we can we can flip out over the wide receivers and all that, but look, I don't think they're nearly as worked up about it as some fans are. So you can react to that however you wish, but those are the facts. So as it relates to Funchess, I think this guy, what you get here is a big red zone target, obviously. And I think a guy who is going to give Frank Reich options. I mean, Frank Reich is about a couple of things. He's about changing lineups. He likes to throw lots of different personnel combinations at you. And he's also, I think, big on route combinations. And so those are two areas where Devin Funchess gives you tremendous, I think, opportunities. And as it relates to the personnel groupings, I really like that. I mean, you've got an opportunity to put a big 6'4 guy out there in Funchess and another big 6'4 guy in Ebron out there. And think about the opportunities that presents in the red zone. Okay, they were pretty good in the red zone last year. I mean, Ebron basically caught everything in the red zone, and you knew where the ball was going, and it didn't freaking matter. So now you add to that mix a Devin Funchess there, and I think that just really makes the defense have to work all the more harder to defend the Colts in those scoring situations. So goal-to-go situations. So you've got two, you've got basically two basketball bodies down there in the red zone. And then T.Y., I would say, was a bigger contributor down there than he's ever been. They got him more involved in the red zone than I've ever seen him. He has been traditionally, I think in the past, more or less a non-factor in the red zone. And you know that because T.Y.'s touchdowns generally came when they went over the top. And those are big plays. Those are great, but not every touchdown is going to be a big play, right? You've got to be able to score in the red zone. So I thought they did a good job of getting T.Y. Hilton involved last year. And I think if that continues with the addition of Funchess and certainly Jack Dwell coming back, look, I'm just telling you, they got tremendous options in the red zone. So I look at this Funchess addition, and this is not groundbreaking, but certainly it's very similar to what the Eagles did with Alshon Jeffrey. Now, I'm not saying he's Alshon Jeffrey, but it has a little bit of a flavor of that. And if you think about that Alshon Jeffrey situation, he was great in that offense and still is. And I think there's certainly a lot of parallels in their body composition in terms of their physique, right? Big, tall, strong guys. Certainly the offense, the two offenses have certainly a lot of parallels. So I think that's a very good comparison to this situation. And Alshon Jeffrey had a lot of success there. And he was very similar, signed a one-year deal, and it was kind of a prove-it deal. I think Alshon Jeffrey got 1 year, $14 million from Philadelphia. Funchess is getting 1 year, $10 million, $3 million in incentives. So, you know, if you want to call it a $10 million deal, $13 million deal, that's up to you. It doesn't matter. But the point is a very similar approach there. And I think you saw the Colts take a gamble, a little bit of a gamble on a guy like Funchess last year in Eric Ebron. Well, how'd that work out? Now, that is certainly the exception to the rule. All right, guys who are embattled generally don't come in and score 14 touchdowns and have a career year, right? That doesn't typically happen, but certainly the Colts offense, the play calling, the scheme, the quarterback, it's a good little incubator for guys like that to maximize their potential. So I think Devin Funchess has got a shot. So anyway, that was sort of my takeaway from Frank Reich coupled with my personal opinion. As it relates, one other thing on Funchess, as it relates to the drops, look, the drops are what they are. They are a factor, and I think they're a fair part of the assessment on Devin Funchess. Look, that is what it is. But drops, while they can be costly, I think generally speaking, they kind of, that you can kind of survive drops, okay, is what I'm saying. And I think if a guy is productive enough that you get more out of him than you lose with those drops, then I just look at it sort of as a whole. And it's kind of like the Ebron situation. Eric Ebron had as many drops last year as he ever had, okay? It wasn't like last year was any different than it was in Detroit. He was the exact same player. He was just in a more successful offense with a quarterback who I think is more reliable, more accurate, certainly than Matthew Stafford. And I think Eric Ebron, in a moment of honesty, would just say that, right? He tries to sugarcoat that, but it's the truth, right? And that's what I'm talking about with Devin Funchess having the opportunity to succeed here. Does it mean he's not going to drop the ball? Oh, no. Okay, he'll probably be the same guy, okay? Drops are drops. I mean, these guys have been playing football for, you know, 10, 12 years in some cases. So if you're a guy who drops the football, you're going to be a guy who drops the football, right? I mean, that's just who you are. However, that doesn't mean you can't be productive, and it doesn't mean that you can't have a good year. And I think that was proven with Eric Ebron. So it is what it is. Now, let's talk about the other big offseason acquisition, Justin Houston. I'm working on a story, and for the past couple of days, past day or so, I've been watching a ton of Justin Houston film, mostly from last year. And I'll give you some impressions there, tell you a few things that I've learned. Number one, I think with Justin Houston, one thing, look, I haven't been a guy, I was not someone who watched a lot of Justin Houston over the years. So for me, this was all brand new, right? I really didn't know much about this guy other than he's got a lot of numbers over the years. So what I learned, I'd say, is that a couple of things. Number one, he's a guy who is not a freak athlete. So his success has largely been, I think, more so a product of strength and technique. All right. So he's a guy, I mean, look, he gets off the ball and all that. So he's got a good burst off the ball, but he's not some sort of freak athlete that can, you know, bend in some spectacular fashion and get around the edge every time. And maybe not, you know, as fast as some of the elite, like freak athletic rushers in the NFL. But then why has he been able to put up the kind of numbers he has? As I said, strength, he can bull rush, he's got tremendous power, and the other thing he has is, I think, elite ability to use his hands. Robert Mathis would be proud, and you know Robert Mathis is a big proponent of hand fighting and engaging those blockers and using your hands to get off those blocks. Well, Justin Houston, from my observations, he is great at that, and I think it's something that's really going to help him here. I don't know that the Colts have a guy like that because, you know, most of their rushers are young. And I think certainly Jabal Sheard has done a decent job with that. But this is, he's going to give the Colts something they lack there. And I think, you know, they have a really athletic rusher in Kamoko Touré, who I think is certainly almost mostly athletic and really lacks the power. I think Tyquan Lewis is sort of a blend. He's got both. He's got the power. He's got some athleticism as well. I don't know which facet with him I'd say is more dominant or which trait is more dominant. But, you know, he's sort of a guy who can do either or. But with Justin Houston, he can really, I think, if you give him a one-on-one, I'm not saying he's going to get there most of the time, but he can get into that offensive tackle and really, I think, power through that guy. And what that will do oftentimes is collapse the pocket, if not get to the quarterback. Look, it helps to have D Ford on the other side, and it helps to have the kinds of players that the Chiefs had up front. You know, Chris Jones, in watching this tape, by the way, their defensive, I guess he's a defensive end in the 3-4. He'll probably be a tackle now. Chris Jones, by the way, is a fantastic player. This guy is a stud. I mean, he had some Warren Sapp-like moments from the tape I was watching. So, look, Justin Houston's not going to be in that kind of environment here. So, you know, I'm interested to see how much of his success he can duplicate, right, away from that fantastic front line they had in Kansas City. Because, look, I mean, I think the Colts have a decent lineup, but they don't have that. You know, so this will be interesting. You know, I think it'll be, I'm not necessarily going to downgrade his expectations for Houston, but I just think it's a question that, you know, we need to consider, right? I mean, how is he going to fare away from that and being put into this group of players, which is not bad, but certainly not at that level. I mean, the Colts don't have a D Ford, and they don't have certainly a Chris Jones. So that's just going to be different. You're probably going to get a few less one-on-ones, and you're going to have to deal with some things that for Justin Houston that perhaps you didn't deal with in Kansas City. So I want to see that. I want to see how he fares there. But I really would say, as I said from watching the film on him, I thought pretty solid against the run. He's strong at the point of attack. Really good ability to set the edge. And I think it's going to help the Colts run defense, which is pretty good anyway. But I think he'll fit in terms of being a consistent run defender. He'll do that. And again, you get him in some third down situations, and he's just going to be coming after the quarterback. I did see several games where he dropped into coverage from time to time. He's not going to have to do that here. You don't have a situation where you have to worry about tight ends and those sorts of things. I mean, there were plays clearly where he had to make a decision at the line of scrimmage. Okay, do I have to drop with this tight end? Is he staying in? Is he going to release and be a receiver? And then what is my responsibility at that point? I mean, so those things take time, right? You've got to diagnose, you've got to think, you've got to decide. And with the Colts defense, he doesn't have to do that. Now you do have to play run or pass. And so you've got to diagnose the play, and that takes a moment at times, but you know, at least on earlier downs, but in terms of those other decisions, he won't have to do that here. And I think that will help him. It will free him up to be, I think, a better pass rusher to some extent. Although, as I said, he will have other challenges. Now, there's been some talk about his contract. Look, it's a lot of money. 2 years, $23 million. I got the contract details from a source, and it's a full $23 million. I mean, he's got, I think, $18 million in guarantees. I had a few people at the owners' meetings kind of like raise their eyebrows. Like, when I was like, well, look, I mean, there was competition for his services, and that was what a Colt source told me. There was another team that came down to the wire and was pushing pretty hard, and the Colts felt lucky to get him. So it is what it is, right? That's business. That's how it works. If whatever you and I do for a living, if we've got two competitors for our services, guess what? The price goes up. That's just how it works. So that is what it is. Look, I'm not crying for the Colts. They got plenty of cap space. They're going to be fine. And a majority of that money gets paid this year. So where they have enormous cap money, cap space, I should say, next year is where the concern is, because they've got a ton of extensions they got to do. They don't have those concerns right now. They'll be fine. So let's take a break here, hear from our sponsor, and I'll be back on the other side with some really interesting stuff I think you're going to want to hear about the draft related to my conversations with Chris Ballard. Stay tuned for that. All right, so we're back. So one of the things I was able to do at the owners' meetings is spend some time with Chris Ballard, which is always revealing, I think, because he's a pretty honest guy. And same with Frank Reich. I mean, they're both just really honest men, and I think they don't really play games with you, which I appreciate as a reporter. I think so many times you're weeding through smoke screens or just overall BS that really doesn't mean anything. And so, you know, my bullshit meter rarely goes off with these guys. And I have a pretty good one. Okay, I've been doing this 20 years, so trust me. I have a pretty good sense for when people are just either not saying anything or not telling you the truth, or at least telling you something that you can't necessarily trust, right? And I don't get that here. So let's dive into this. Something that I learned from Ballard that I think is very interesting. He said the draft conversation was very interesting because, you know, he thinks that, how do I put this? His direct quote to me was, he said, these mock drafts are all going to be wrong. I was like, well, okay, but they're always wrong. He says, well, no, they're really wrong this time. And I said, well, why? He says, because. He says, there are not as many elite players in this draft as people would have you believe. Now, I was surprised to hear that. I thought this was considered, you know, a pretty good draft in terms of the talent. He likes the talent level. He's just saying the truly elite crop in this group in this draft is not as deep as people would have you believe. He thinks the number of upper echelon players in this draft could be as short as like 14 players. And that's a number that's not arbitrary, right? I mean, he probably knows who those 14 guys are. I mean, obviously he didn't tell me, but if that's the case, here's why this is interesting. Because he says after that point, he says it's going to be a free-for-all, because the feeling in his mind is that the talent, the depth of the talent in this draft from that point on is pretty consistent all the way through the top of the third round. Now think about that. If you're saying that there's this group of elite players that's 14, 15 players deep, whatever it is, and then after that, the talent level is pretty consistent all the way through the next, what, like 40 picks or so? Maybe more than that? Well, what's going to happen? Well, Chris Ballard was very clear what's going to happen. He says, you're going to have guys go in the first round who no one thought was going in the first round. Because what happens is, I think with mock drafts in particular, what ends up happening is you have guys who start to be viewed as first-round picks. And then it becomes a matter of, okay, well, do they go 16 or do they go 21? Or are they the 17th pick or the 27th? But this guy's a first-rounder, right? You know, and I think you get a lot of that. And it's not a criticism. And look, I don't know anything about this stuff, right? I just work here. But my point is, I mean, look, my colleagues in the media, we all do that, right? I mean, I think we label guys. And then we start to see some guys as first rounders and other guys who are not first rounders, as if they're like terrible players if they're not a first rounder. The point is, if you don't see much difference, and this is just one team's opinion, okay? Now, if you asked the Kansas City Chiefs or the Houston Texans, they may tell you something completely different. So I can't speak for that, but I cover the Colts, and this is what they would tell you. They see it as the talent level being pretty consistent after halfway through the first round. They see it pretty consistent through the top of the third. So if that's the case, as I said, I think everything is in play. And what this also does, what this also tells me is there ain't no way the Colts are trading up. And I've gotten this question a lot. When you've got a team with a low first round, with a late first round pick, okay, like the Colts do, what are they, 26th? And then you've also got them at 34. That tends to be a question sometimes. Okay, can you package those picks? We've seen this happen many, many times, right? I mean, how did the Kansas City Chiefs go get Pat Mahomes a couple years ago, right? They did exactly that. They packaged their first round pick with another pick, went up and got him, and boy, has that paid off, right? What was that, number 10, 11 overall, I think? So, I mean, that's one of the great trades, I think, in recent history to go get that guy. And something we don't talk about enough. However, that's different. That's a quarterback. That's a team that was facing some long-term uncertainty at that position, you know, with Alex Smith's contract situation and all that. So for them, that was a very valuable move. The Colts clearly having a quarterback situation that does not need to be addressed. They don't have that incentive to move up. And what is the position that you'd go move up and get a guy where you'd be willing to give up 34? What would that even be, right? I mean, clearly pass rush, I think, would be what a lot of people would say. But look, they did address the position with Justin Houston. I think what the Colts do here is they just let it come to them. And if they believe, as I have outlined already, if they truly believe there is great depth in that late first round through the second round, and they've got two second rounders, as you know, let it come to you. And you're going to stockpile three of those players in that range where they really love the depth. Okay, middle of the first through top of the third. They've got 26, 34, and then their own second round pick. So that's three players right there in a crop of players that they love. So why do you see them as a team that would move up? I don't see it. I don't think it's going to happen. I'm calling it now. They're not moving up. If I'm wrong, then we'll just forget this conversation happened. Okay? Bet. So, but I would say, as I said, It makes too much sense for a team that wants depth and a team that really, I think, treats its draft picks as extremely valuable and is thinking long term. They want a young team. They want to build their own, grow their own. Well, you do that by having more picks, not fewer. So I don't see it happening, and that's just my two cents. But it's not based on nothing. It's based on a conversation with the guy who's making the decision. So is that worth something to you? I don't know. You tell me. But I really do see two things for the Colts. I don't see a trade up, and I see truly a best player available approach. Now, I know every team says they do that, but if you really think about it, the Colts didn't truly do that last year. They took the best player available at the positions they needed help. It just so happened it worked out perfectly, right? I mean, the first pick, Quentin Nelson, I mean, we know that whole story. But that was also very much a need pick. That was a need pick as much as he was the best player on the board at that point. That was a need pick, no doubt about it. There were other players they could have picked who had good years, but not any players at a position where there was such a great need as offensive line. So that's a need pick. Go to round two. Darius Leonard, that was a need pick, okay? The linebacker unit was in shambles coming into last year. We didn't know who was going to play, okay? And they got their man right there, need pick. Braden Smith, need pick, because they came into that draft saying, we're going to fix this offensive line. So is that a need pick? You're damn right it's a need pick. So either you can continue through the second round and look at the defensive line picks, okay? Those were need picks. Now, it doesn't mean they just willy-nilly picked the best defensive lineman on the board when Kamoko Touré came up. I'm not saying that. I mean, that you have your players ranked and you try to adhere to your rankings, regardless of the position. But you can't tell me the Colts didn't really truly consider need very, very heavily in all of their first and second round picks last year. There is no question in my mind they heavily considered need. I think they aren't really, I think, in a position to have to do that as much this year. For the obvious reason, the needs are not as great this year, right? They have a lot of players who have proven a lot of things over the past year, and I think they can take a more deliberate approach and just pick good players. Get some talent on the roster. Just keep increasing the talent level. So Chris Ballard, I think, has really set himself up to take a truly best player available approach, or lean more toward the best player available approach. And he did it because he crushed the draft last year. Now, I'm not going to promise you they can do it again because, I mean, like, how? Right? But how do you top that? But the point is, that successful draft has really put them in position to just take some shots, man. Just go get you some good players and see what happens. I think that's what they're going to do. And they have taken a lot of pressure off themselves by having such a good draft last year. Taking pressure off in terms of having to address specific positions. They are not in a position where they have to do that, where they are beholden to needs. And that is a great place to be. So, as I wind this down, I want to talk about one other thing. I told you I would mention a position that no one's talking about. And maybe someone is, but I haven't heard this a lot. Here's the thought. Could the Colts draft a quarterback? Why would they do that? Andrew Luck's healthy. They've got Jacoby Brissett, who they're not trading, as far as I can tell, unless a meteor hits the earth and something crazy happens. I don't see it happening. So why would you draft a quarterback? And I'm talking late rounds here. Well, here's the thought on that. A couple of things happened during this conversation with Chris Ballard at the owners' meetings. He was asked whether there's a scenario where the Colts would carry three quarterbacks. That is not something they have done that I can recall, other than when Andrew Luck was hurt and they were trying to keep him off IR a couple of years ago. For the most part, they haven't carried three quarterbacks on the roster. So, and this is something a lot of teams are doing, right? This is not a new trend. It's something the Colts have been doing, I think, for the last, I'd say, at least 4 or 5 years. So why would that change? Well, and why is that significant? His answer, by the way, was absolutely, there are scenarios where we would carry three quarterbacks. Well, that got my attention. I'm like, well, okay, well, what? Because the only scenario where you do that is if you have a quarterback who you don't want to cut because someone might pick him up. And the only scenario, in my estimation, where that happens is if you draft one. So we know in the long term, as much as the Colts love Jacoby Brissett, and they do love Jacoby Brissett, they're not going to give him a new contract next year for two reasons. Number one, it's going to cost you way too much money, number one. And number two, he doesn't want that. He wants to go somewhere where he can compete for a starting job. So Jacoby Brissett's gone after this year. That is what it is. Okay, he's got one more year. He's going to back up Andrew Luck another year, and then the guy's gone. So one thing that smart football people will tell you is that it's better to address the need before it becomes a need rather than after. Okay, right now, quarterback is not a need. We know it absolutely will be next year at this time. So the smart thing to do is arguably, right, address that need now versus later. And I think that's something that is really on the table here. I've already explained why the Colts aren't as beholden to needs this year. So I'm not saying they have picks just to sort of, you know, screw away or anything. I'm not saying that, but I'd take a shot on one of these quarterbacks later in the draft. Okay. Is that day two? Is it day three? I don't know. But I think it could happen, and I think it's very plausible they do that. It's not a prediction. I'm just telling you, I think that would make some sense, and it's something they should consider. Again, that gives that young player a year in the system to learn it, absorb it, observe, learn from the guys ahead of him when there's absolutely no pressure. Okay, get a little preseason play in his system, you know, see how that goes. And then next year, when he's the primary backup, presumably, if this guy pans out, this theoretical draft pick, whoever he is, am I getting ahead of myself here? Yes. Then in 2020, when he's got to be Andrew Luck's primary backup, theoretically, then you feel, you know, much more secure about having that guy there. So I just think that this is a scenario that could play out. And I think it's a scenario the Colts are considering and should consider. I don't know who it would be. I don't know how strongly they feel about this. But one of the reasons that Chris Ballard has wanted to hold on to Jacoby Brissett is because certainly they love him and they trust him. But more than that, or as much as that, if you move him, if you trade Jacoby Brissett, okay, and you get that asset and you get a draft pick for him, all you've done is create a need. And that's a huge position on your team, backup quarterback. And Chris Ballard's like, I don't need to go create work for myself, okay? I don't need to go create needs. We've just got done addressing all these other needs. Why would I go create another need? Well, I get it, man. So, again, something as important as quarterback gets back to the philosophy I just talked about. Address the need before it becomes a need. And the time to do that is now. So, we shall see. It'll be very interesting. This draft, I think, is going to be full of potential surprises, I think, for the Colts, because, as I said, they've got the world at their fingertips. They can do whatever they want, and it's a great place to be. So that's the podcast. That's your Horseshoes with Holder. I will try to get back and do another one, I guess, here before the draft. We've got a few weeks, so I should probably try to get back to you guys. I'm going to try to do these more regularly. I know I always say that, but I've had life happens and things happen. So, but I am thinking about you. So hopefully I'll be back soon. But I hope you learned something today. Lots to talk about. Off-season workouts actually get underway here in about 10 days. So you're going to be seeing some interviews. I think on the 15th they get started. So stay tuned for that. I'll have a lot of coverage of that in The Athletic. Working on some stuff. As I said, working on a Justin Houston piece. I'll publish this week. So I hope you check that out. It's going to be film in there. So I do lots of that in The Athletic. So I hope you check it out. There's a 40% off discount that runs throughout the draft. And got great coverage from all 32 teams, as well as every other sport on the side. So knock yourself out. All right, thanks for listening. I'm Stephen Holder of The Athletic. This is 4 Seasons Holder. I'll be back soon. In the meantime,